Well, the Venezuelan oil, Lee, could either go to China or it could go to us. I'm talking about stealing the Venezuelan oil, you understand?
Right.
We're simply talking about regaining control of the hemisphere.
So-called final destination.
Tim Stewart, head of the U.S. Oil and Gas Association, explained the strategic importance of Venezuela. And if you read the Wall Street Journal article that was out yesterday, they explained, look, Marco Rubio wanted to pick up Maduro. Trump wanted to cut a deal with him. And the most important part of the deal to Trump, aside from information that he wanted, had to do with oil. Take a listen. This is Tim Stewart. Either way, the oil is now under our control now. In fact, there's an incredible headline in Bloomberg right now. Bloomberg Business. Trump now has his very own oil empire. This is not by accident. Let's do the math. Start with the oil production of the U.S. Then include Venezuela, the rest of Latin America, from Mexico to Argentina and everywhere in between, Brazil, Guyana, Colombia. Like it or not, they are all living under the Donro Doctrine, an increasingly belligerent Washington sphere of influence over the Americas. Together, they account for nearly 40% of the world's oil output. And he writes, I'm talking about actual barrels already flowing into the market, not underground reserves that would take time and money to develop. Essentially, Trump is turning America into a NATO, not a NATO, I'm sorry, an OPEC. I always say NATO, into an OPEC, where with control over this amount of oil, you can begin to influence world prices.
Well, something we've done with the Strategic Oil Reserve, which, of course, Biden depleted. We've done that many times.
We have, but only for short term.
Right, yes.
Yes. Okay, so here's Tim Stewart with the U.S. Oil and Gas Association. Talk about the significance of this.
If U.S. oil companies do wind up reviving Venezuela's oil industry, how does that impact Americans? Are we talking cheaper oil, job creation? What do you think?
You know, our entire refinery apparatus in the Gulf Coast in Texas and Louisiana was largely built around the import of Venezuelan heavy crude. And so our refineries are going to be the first ones to really benefit from an increased flow coming in. Well, that's going to impact, obviously, the prices for consumers, which is great news. But more importantly, I think long term is what this does now is it puts 40% of the entire production in the world under the U.S. security umbrella. That's from Alberta to Argentina. And it completely resets the global geopolitical world in terms of our, the U.S.'s ability to project its interests across the world. We can do things internationally without having an immediate price spike in crude, and that's going to impact consumers. And it just gives the U.S. incredible flexibility to be able to project its power across the globe.
So effectively, Trump is able to do what China did with rare earth minerals. He's doing it with oil.
Yes, he learned.
Yes.
He learned. And you could tell it was a huge story. I made a big deal of it, but almost nobody else noticed it. New York Post did an amazing job reporting it. At the time, what happened? Remember Trump said, hey, I'm cutting off the hundreds of thousands of Chinese visas. I'm done.
Right.
No more Chinese visas. Yeah. You're stealing too much of our stuff. China said, okay, we'll cut off the rare earth minerals then. And they control 90 to 100% at the time of these. We came within a few weeks of the American automobile manufacturer lines idling.
And then that would have led to computers and defense systems and phones. And
we realized how bad this was. China doesn't just go around cutting business deals, you understand.
Right.
They use projectional force. Right. They use intimidation to do this. They use Belt and Road. And so we've just basically, Trump realized, like, we can invent all the stuff we want, but it doesn't matter. China's the only one that's going to be able to manufacture it. If your servers and your tech and all of your weaponry, is, you got to ask China nicely for it, and they set the prices, you're done as a country. Yeah. You can't be isolationist. You can't. So Trump panicked and said, okay, all right, you can have your visas back. China says, well, you still got to be punished. We're going to give you enough rare earths for your top three auto manufacturers. The rest are on their own. And you've seen this absolute mad dash and scramble all over the world now where we're buying up rare earth mines and minerals using like checks from the Pentagon, because this is truly national strategy, right?
Yes, because our fighters and bombers and missiles and everything that's got computers or any type of defense industry has got to have that.
Well, guess what Venezuela has? This is from Bloomberg. Venezuela is a tweet for them. Venezuela is a strategic prize, not just the 303 billion barrels of oil, but 10,000 tons of gold for AI chips and aerospace, 14 billion tons of iron ore for EV frames, coltan for tech capacitors, 5.5 million tons of nickel for batteries, a magnet, for hedge funds, short sellers, lobbyists, brokers, and billionaires. Yes. They've also got diamonds, iron ore, coal, uranium, and strategic supplies of coltan and at least 12 other critical rare earth minerals. You can see why Trump would be drawn to it like a fly to you know what. Yeah. So, because he's advocating for the American people. And what has happened, Lee, is this mentality has come to Washington. It came from the Uniparty when they decided, well, China will do everything and we'll buy their stuff. They'll rule the world. We're cool with it. We don't even want to have borders. That was Clinton and Bush and Obama, where it is seen as just gauche and very embarrassing to do anything of any kind to advocate for your own interests. Because we're just so rich already. We'll let a minority go get it. The Chinese, it's not fair if we have everything. So we don't ever do anything in our own interest. China ate our lunch. And they were about to start dictating orders. They literally told Trump he will take their spies. And Trump had to say, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. And he learned from that. And he learned fast. And so you see all over the world. I mean, we had that great article going into Christmas where the Euro weenies were complaining because they were supposed to cut a rare earth mineral deal with Brazil. They were supposed to leave, get on the plane in 3 days. And then they got a message from Brazil. Oh, by the way, just don't stop by. Don't come by. No, the Americans already been here. They cut us a check. And the Europeans were commenting. They were like, wow, that they were in the shutdown. We didn't think they could cut a check. And they'd already put the money aside. Trump is not messing around. And so he's saying to China, you get to help, get the heck out of our hemisphere. And by the way, we'll take the rare earths. Bye-bye. Here's Tim Stewart explaining the Trump denying the Venezuelan oil to China, which is their main buyer.
How would a U.S.-backed Venezuelan oil industry impact China?
Venezuela is sort of the poster child for the Belt and Road Initiative. And I think the numbers I saw with Venezuela now is about $20 billion to China just over the course of the last few years. That's largely backed by crude shipments. What this says to China is, I'm sorry, but your failure to plan with good borrowing partners does not constitute our financial obligation. It also sends a message to China, hey, get out of our hemisphere. And I think that's what the administration is trying to project. It's going to impact the Chinese incredibly. It's going to cut off they take about 80% of Venezuela's crude right now. So it's going to have a big impact on them.
Yeah, this really hurts China. In fact, several analysts were saying overnight, it hurts them so badly, they don't think China could prosecute a war right now to take Taiwan because we have so locked down this fuel and we have them sanctioned everywhere else. This also just absolutely guts Russia because now we've got OPEC-style control over oil prices.
And if we keep them low, they lose their rear ends.
And notice the timing of this, just as we're cutting the Ukraine deal.
Right. Supposedly, yeah.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, we keep thinking we are. But they're trying again. Anyway, they're at the negotiating table.
There's an effort, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, Cheryl Cassoni, I think better than anyone else. She gets on my nerves sometimes on Fox Business, but she does.
She tries hard, Tara. Give her a break now.
I know, she does. I think she laid this out better than anyone else, though, why Trump is so interested in this oil. Oh, come on. Play, please.
You know, the big story, of course, is can you provide security and rebuild the infrastructure for U.S. oil companies to go into Venezuela and operate again? Now, Chevron is technically still there, but ExxonMobil and ConocoPhillips, they left. In fact, they are owed billions of dollars by the Venezuelan government because of what Hugo Chavez did years ago. And that's when they exited the country. ConocoPhillips actually is operating next door in Guyana. That's a different type of oil. The oil that comes out of Venezuela, you've probably heard this, it's a heavier, dirtier crude.
Difficult to get to, which is part of the problem with the money.
Right. And, you know, but they've got 20% of the global oil supply. They've got 300 billion barrels of oil. They've got more oil in Venezuela than the Saudis, than Kuwait, than Iran. That's why they're exporting. So here is the proven oil reserves, as you can see. I mean, look, Venezuela is twice the size of the state of California, to be quick here, everybody. But look at this. I mean, this is the export story, right? Exporting to.
Okay, so she's saying the same thing. And this is Bloomberg, having de facto control of the Western Hemisphere's petroleum wealth is a geopolitical game changer. For decades, U.S. military adventurism was constrained by the impact any war would have on energy costs. We're not anymore. This is a power shift for us.
To use a business term, this is the ultimate hostile takeover.
Yeah. And what he's doing, he's playing things Chinese style. But the difference is China installs and backs these horrible dictators who torture people, murder them, rape them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you go into a Venezuelan prison. I did a story when I first got here about 10 years ago. They were crucifying people in Venezuela, literally crucifying them in Venezuelan prisons. That was, Chavez and then Maduro. So, I mean, you're talking about the benefits for the Venezuelan people. We don't want the money. We're not going to steal the oil. We're going to give you a better time of it.
Yeah.
As they make the transition, and we're not going to come in. Now, this is going to be very tricky because obviously the remainder of Maduro's party is still in charge there.
Mm-hmm. That's the sticky wicket.
That's the sticky part. However, Stephen Miller was saying, look, we got total control over them. And they do. Because here's the thing that nobody is reporting for some reason. And it's actually pretty revolutionary because it's choking Cuba right now. We have a total blockade going on Venezuela right now.
Yeah.
Sea blockade going on them, which, by the way, we got a court order to do. This is not Trump just doing military adventurism. We are actually enforcing the sanctions that were passed by Congress and signed by the president. This is completely legal. This is exactly what we've been empowered to do, but we've never done.
That's it. And that's Trump is the only one that has had the guts to do it.
I know.
That's the thing. This has been going on. It's like you were saying the other day, there was already a $25 million bounty on Maduro's head when Biden was president, but they did nothing about it. Nothing.
And that was based on the indictments and under Trump. Exactly. He was already indicted and wanted criminally.
Yes.
Yeah. So this blockade of Venezuela, what are we doing? We're not letting Iran have any oil. We're not letting China have any oil. And or what Iran and Venezuela were doing, they were refining each other's oil. It's different types.
Yeah.
So Iran doesn't get any in. They don't sell any. And Venezuela doesn't get any out. They don't sell any. And that is part of the reason why you're starting to see the leadership of Iran go, oh, my gosh, we are cooked.
And these are international sanctions. These are international sanctions, not just the U.S.
Yes. Totally lawful. And totally awful if you're China or Iran or Cuba. We could get a trifecta here, Lee.
Yeah.
We could get the collapse of Cuba, the collapse of Iran in terms of the mullahs, and China really having to its knees.
Cuba could be like days from collapse.
Yeah, because they were already pretty close.
I mean, without us having to do anything, because they depended on Venezuela so much. In fact, Maduro depended on Cuban security guards because he was so afraid that his security was compromised, which it was.
It's I'll explain this a bit in the next segment. But Cuba, without the influx of cash from Venezuela, they just collapse.
Yeah.
They're done.
Yeah. They can't even keep the lights on.
No, they can't. And how absurd is it anyway that we're allowing a communist dictatorship in our hemisphere?
Well,
the founders would have been like, what?
There's one less, but, you know.
Yeah, well, I think we could see Cuba go down, too. I mean, this is fantastic. All of it. I'll explain. Coming up next. Over the Christmas break, the Attorney General of Washington State warned citizen journalists, she's a Democrat, of course, to stop investigating Somali daycares or face potential hate crime charges. So, in the Democrat one-party regime, were it to exist, the fraud, the theft from the taxpayers would be okay. Questioning the fraud would be a jailable offense. It's like the upside down in Stranger Things. And folks, I just want to emphasize this to you today, okay? If Elon Musk had not bought X, Tim Walz would be the vice president today. Guaranteed. Nick Shirley, who took down Tim Walz, a kid with a cell phone, who racked up 140 million hits just on the original video, doesn't count all the clips everybody else did, probably went into hundreds of millions more, took out a governor in 2 weeks. Those 2 weeks, that period, X racked up the most user interaction in terms of hits, clicks, likes, views, that kind of thing, ever. Not just for X in X history, but in social media history, it's a leviathan. People love real stuff that's not censored by a gatekeeper. Like everything was. And I opened the show today with the story of Nick Shirley, the kid in the video. And what he did was remarkable. He said, okay, I'm going to go document $100 million worth of fraud in 24 hours. And so he's like, hey, this take care. And they're showing up and they're showing how much money they're given. And some of them were these fake Somali transport companies. By the way, we now have the good news is Donald Trump has shut down the no verification daycare funding program. $19 billion went out the door for Joe Biden. In Minnesota, Joe Thompson, the federal prosecutor, says almost all the daycares are fake. Give you an idea of how big the fraud was. But folks, $19 billion, that's just the daycares. That doesn't count the home health cares, 455 homes owned by Somalis, most of them empty. They're just getting the money, but they don't have any patients. The health transport companies, over 1,400 of those alone in Minnesota, 800 owned by Somalis. I mean, the size of this. The $19 billion, again, is just the home health care. The daycare fraud. But that's not the most important part. Let me tell you where we'd be today. If Elon Musk had not bought X, Trump would not be the president because no one would have been able to hear from him. The FBI would still be inside of X and Instagram and Facebook censoring. Nick Shirley? He wouldn't even have an account. They'd never let you see this. The FBI terminated over 10,000 accounts. Don't forget the Twitter files. Before, this is what Musk found, and then he kicked him out when he came in through the front door with the kitchen sink. He literally actually had a kitchen sink. See, they made a critical error. And had they not made it, the Democrats, right now, this would be a totalitarian regime, but it's not. Tim Walz is resigning and Nick Shirley has a very popular X account. I want you to understand something because people just don't grasp the importance of freedom of speech. People send me so many texts. Don't complain. Tell us what they're doing to fix it. What's the answer? Free speech. Well, how do we fix free speech? Well, what about that over there? Free speech. Understand what happened with Nick Shirley. Humanity. In all of human history, we have never seen a thing like it. Never have. We didn't have the twin powers of unlimited reach of social media, the technology that is social media, but also the freedom that Elon Musk has given all of us to say what we want. And if it's popular, we make it. If it's not, we don't. And I opened the show talking about being a young reporter and getting stuck on traffic and accidents, which nobody wanted to do. And then I ran into this great story. This illegal immigrant who caused this catastrophic accident came home. The officers were despondent. They had to bond him out. They couldn't keep him. I wanted to write about that. My liberal editor said no. I said, but it's a great story. I'm like, gosh, you would. No, you can't. People hate Hispanics. Well, no, this isn't about Hispanics. It's about illegal immigrants. That's what the gatekeeping function looked right like. I worked for a McClatchy-owned newspaper. Fort Mill, South Carolina was my first job. And that's when I learned this isn't real news. It's fake. The liberal gatekeepers make it fake. When Trump slipped through in 2016, he did it by doing those rallies, right? And there's a lot of videos cut of them. It was before the censorship. He beat Hillary Clinton by, and I read the report at the time, he got 10 times the hits, clicks, and likes she did. He just blew her away. So almost immediately, you had the FBI going into Breitbart, you had the FBI going into X, going to all these places and censoring. Taking over Google. You know how fake Google is. Won't show you what you know is real, only wants to show you what you know is fake. They were this close. This close. Tim Shirley would be censored and Tim Walz would be in a vice president's office, but didn't happen. But we have to hold on to this. And that's why I was so glad this weekend to see Donald Trump and Elon Musk having dinner together. One doesn't make it without the other. They need each other to save America. And let me tell you what scares me. I'm afraid they're going to try to kill Musk. I mean, I know they already are. He's got a security team. Because they know the board will replace Musk with somebody liberal who will let them censor, and it ends. That's how fast it could be over. There won't be any more Nick Shirley's. There won't be any more investigations into the Iranian daycare fraud in California. The Somali grocery store fraud in Ohio. The Somali restaurant fraud in Ohio. The warlord who got the governor of Maine to give him millions of dollars that he used to build an army in Somalia. It all goes away. They rob you blind and they arrest you if you question it. That's the reality we'd be living in. But the Democrats made a mistake. They thought Elon Musk was their friend. He wasn't. But this ain't over. And it's all hanging by a thread. It hangs by a thread every day. We need Trump to survive. We need Musk to survive. We need J.D. Vance to survive. Because we're in the thick of the fight now and they've only got one way out. And these three got to go. They know it. I know it. We know it. So I was so glad again to see Daily Wire reporting that J.D. Vance is not going to be with Donald Trump anymore. They're going to keep them in separate locations for continuity of office. Case one is killed. Texter writes on the Common Sense Retirement Planning text line. Where'd it go? Oh, here we go. All of this geopolitical stuff is awesome, Tara, but let's talk about important stuff. What do you think of the Stranger Things conclusion? I'm hoping it will end Netflix. It was that bad. You know, Stranger Things, I've loved it, and for good reason. It was an absolutely brilliant first season. The beginning was simple. It was kids. It was some of the best 80s nostalgia that I've ever seen. I mean, just the detail that they went into. The plot was amazing. It was scary. But Netflix has been doing a certain thing that they let their shareholders know about in their latest SEC report. You know how you're, as a company, required to do that if something you're doing could hurt the stock price. And they announced that their foremost goal now will not be making money. It will not be entertaining people to make money. It will not be serving their customer base. It will be equity. Equity is the most important thing in everything that they do. Meanwhile, National Review did an excellent article on Netflix talking about what they are doing now and how in Hollywood and in at Netflix, the most talented male writers of their generation are not allowed to work because they're white male. The traditional fellowship routes that you would take as a writer, producer, director are completely cut off or close to completely cut off to white males. One of them sponsored by Sundance, 17% white males. If you go back and do what my family and I did over Christmas, one of the things our family loves to do is we like to watch American classic music movies. We just finished like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And we watch them for all kinds of eras, just the best stuff. So the kids can, you really get an idea of what American culture was. You can't miss it, you know, when it's gone or understand it today without knowing what it was and how great it was and how everyone in the world wanted to be a part of it. So we were watching that stuff and I started noticing, talking to my son about it, everybody who produced, wrote, and directed, with just one exception, the best movies of our time, they were males. They were white. Now, I'm sure there were great female folks who maybe, you know, good old boys club maybe couldn't get in there. But for the most part, they were white male. I hate that, but that's what American film history is. And that's how Stranger Things started, too. They were talking about in the National Review article how one of the most talented directors in Hollywood, who happened to be white male, had to quit. He runs a crypto company now. He was finally told by Netflix, we just don't have anything for you. Here, you're white male. It doesn't matter how good you are. Can you tell that when you go to Netflix? I started noticing this. I get on the treadmill and I see something come up on Netflix and I'm like, oh, that looks cool. And I'll run it into Rotten Tomatoes, see what the ratings. 40% every time because they're only DEI hiring. And they're doing this other thing too. They're taking established theory series like Stranger Things. And because, you know, you fall in love with the actors, right? They're pushing the actors to the side and injecting new gay actors or people, you know, acting as gay characters and then replacing the big storylines with their storylines. So you've been on a storyline for like 2-3 seasons. It's got to go. We got to talk about gay. Well, can we do that quickly? No. One of the most incredible things, and X was lit up with this over Christmas. So many people like us, it's been 10 years. You're waiting for the season finale, like the final season finale of Stranger Things. Do you know what they did? You'll understand this whether you like the show or not. You're going to have the fight for the world, right? Vecna the monster is trying to kill the world. Trying to end the world. Trying to finish it off, right? World could collapse and be finished by Vecna at any moment. They pause for a 10-minute coming out scene. This is set in the 80s now. In which the characters, especially the male ones, are crying at the beauty of the fact that a particular actor is, or character, is gay. Tears. It's so beautiful that he's gay. The world is about to end, and they stop it for a coming out scene, which would have never gone the way it did in the 80s. So people were getting a ton of hits, clicks, and likes on X by just, you know, no, this is how a coming out scene would have gone in the 80s. For real, not for fake. The coming out scene at 10 minutes was longer than the final battle we waited a decade for with Vecna. I won't tell you how it ended. I don't want to be a spoiler, but I mean, come on. How do you think it ended? Yeah. Longer coming out scene than final battle scene with Vecna. I hope it signs the death warrant for Netflix. Although, to be fair, they've already pre-reported their own demise to the SEC by letting investors know, hey, we're not going to focus on the product. It's capitalism making money. No, it's all about equity. And it's just been amazing, Stranger Things, to watch over a decade what woke has done. Now, the really good news is we've got all kinds of cool people coming in the market, like Larry Ellison and Paramount and others who I think are going to begin to hire these white male writers back. I don't know why they're the best in every generation. They just are. We just got to go with it. I just want to be entertained in my pajamas. I don't care. And maybe they'll come back to the industry. But right now they're totally shut out, as National Review documented. But hopefully we're going to get Paramount and other people who want to make money, and they're going to come in and they're going to do real entertainment, because what's out there now sucks. And you could tell how it's degraded. And if you wondered why, it's because the best writers are not allowed to work or to write, and it does not matter how good they are. They're blocked from coming up through the system. So we need a new system. Texter writes, my husband and I were just talking about, where'd this go? My husband and I were just talking about why there aren't any great funny movies like the 80s anymore. We bought all of our old favorites and we just watched them on repeat. That's why. If you look at what you're watching, all those old classic movies, right? Great American classics. For better or for worse, you go down the list. Producer, male. Director, male. Writers, male. Not to say women can't write great stuff. I'm sure they do. And I'm sure good old boys club, I'm sure some women along the way were pushed out. It could have been great. But for whatever reason, white males dominate Hollywood. They're just good at it. Our best work culturally comes from them. And they're being systematically shut out right now. Regardless of talent, doesn't matter. So much so that Netflix is literally declaring it in its SEC filing, hey, it might hurt our stock price that we're not hiring the best people. But we got to go BIPOC. We got to go equity. And that's why it all sucks. It's not just because it's woke. I mean, they are producing woke stuff. Yeah, and I don't want to watch that. It's because writers are now hired based on whether they're female, lesbian, or black. Not because they're great. And in the National Review piece, again, they've got one of the most talented directors from Hollywood, can't even work in Hollywood. He's the head of a crypto company. He gave up after being told again and again and again, well, we love your work, but you're a white male. Sorry. We're going to need someone else, someone not as good as you. It's disgusting. It's destroying our culture. But again, you're seeing market forces move. And yeah, but that's why. That's why everything sucks. And I mean, it even sucks on the level of, okay, I'm going to find something to watch. It doesn't seem that woke. I'm on the treadmill. And I like go run. I mean, whatever new thing Netflix has come out with, I'll run it through again, Rotten Tomatoes. And it's like, what, average 40% from the audience? And I don't watch anything less than 75. I mean, it's pointless. It's too much good stuff out there from other places. But listen to this. One of the ways that directors and writers, producers used to come up was through Sundance. They have programs for this. In the 2010s, Sundance came under fire for producing a disproportionate number of white male authors of movies. So the organization decided that would never happen again. This is a really big track for people to get in. By 2016, they'd reduced, though there were 20, that white males were 27% of the applicants, just 14% of the participants. By 2018, they'd got it down to just 8% of those allowed through the door who were white men, were white men. Just 8% writers, producers, that kind of thing. This is why Netflix sucks, and a lot of what's produced now sucks. Notably, of the 5.8% of the fellows that were allowed to be white men, nearly all have either some sort of defining characteristic. They're either gay, disabled, or partnered with a woman or person of color. So if you are going to be among the 5% of white males that are allowed on the most wanted track in Hollywood, you got to either be gay, disabled, or in a BIPOC relationship and openly woke. That's why everything sucks on Netflix. The good people, the good writers, we could have a golden age of entertainment. They're just not allowed to write. They're not allowed to produce, and they're not allowed to direct. But again, if you watch what Larry Ellison and his son and other people are doing, like Paramount and all of those, but I think what they're doing, and Apple too even, you're still going to get some of the woke stuff, sure. But I think what they're doing is going, wow, there is so much untapped talent out there. I really have a lot of hope that entertainment will improve because the Obamas wrecked it. Anyway, enough of that. Have a great rest of the day. Mark Gallagher's up next.